Okay. Oh, yeah. It could be, so talk slower.
If you put the batteries in backwards, and it'll record every 2 seconds.
All right. Okay, recommendation number 7. Number 7, we're proposing a major change in fire safety zone standards from RLDB's current standards, which go up to at least 200 feet around the house, depending on which classification your land is in and what kind of roof you have. We're proposing that we adopt instead the same standard that's used by the Oregon Department of Forestry in their Senate Bill 360, otherwise known as Urban Wildlands Interface Bill. And I think the reason that the state has so much more liberal standards, if you will, is because they have determined that you're off spending your money making your house fireproof in the area right around your house instead of going out hundreds of feet, because the cause of most of the fires in houses, according to my understanding from working with these guys, it's because you get embers blowing up against the house, into the gutters, under the windowsills and whatnot. So they're saying make your fire in your house real safe and do a good job on your 30-foot primary zone, and instead of going out hundreds of feet. So I included in this packet the standards from the state rules, and I only put down what the total of both the primary and the secondary are in the packet, but I can tell you what the primaries are too. The primaries for any zone, well, let me back up a step. All the land in the county has been classified as either low, moderate, high, extreme, or high density extreme. However, there are no lands in our county that's high density extreme, so we can just forget about that. I think those are all over the line. All of these other ones, except for low, low has no requirements whatsoever. You don't have to clear anything. The other ones all have a 30-foot primary zone. And then if you're in a high, you still only have a 30-foot requirement around your house. There's no secondary requirement if you have a non-flammable roof. If you have a flammable roof, you got to go out 20 more feet, giving you a total of 50. If you're in an extreme zone, such as my house is, and a lot of us are, if you're on the south slope with the brush, you have an extra 20 feet if you have a non-flammable roof, and an extra 40 feet if you have a flammable roof. So the total distance at that point is 50 feet and 70 feet, I think. You know, I'm looking at the wrong page. I'm looking at the secondary. Yeah, I was looking at my notes, but we're looking at secondary, not the total. I'm sorry, the total. Okay, if we go with non-flammable roofs, let's start with that. The total setback, the total primary and secondary for moderate fire hazard lands is 30 feet, for high hazard lands is 30 feet, and for extreme hazard lands is 50 feet. If you have a flammable roof, then your moderate lands are 30 feet, your high hazard lands are 50 feet, and your extreme lands are 100 feet, which is quite different than the RLDCs. I also heard, I talked to Roger down at planning, and he said that this would help planning out, because right now they get people going, how come you make us do this, 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 and this, and the state only makes us do this? Well, he was in favor of it. But at least I think he was. I think the only ones they consider flammable basically are wood.
Treated or not?
I don't know.
Yes, Dave. I just like to thank the subcommittee for eliminating that onerous requirement of the vegetation zones extending beyond the property lines.
Oh, yeah.
And I do appreciate that. That's been one of my pet peeves for about 4 years.
Yeah, that was another issue. Thank you for bringing that up. I should have mentioned that.
Okay, I have a question. The 30 feet you say is because you determined the 30 feet because you know some guys that said that was a better standard. What did the professional fire people, say it.
No, I didn't determine that. That was the Oregon Department of Forestry.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood.
Yes.
I spoke to Oregon Department of Forestry about how they came up with these standards and why they stuck to such a small area for this total defensive space. This entire standard was made for the whole city, and there are other options that are put in here to be used. Okay, and this was also made so the people of the state buy it, they actually buy into this ordinance and actually do some kind of fuel reduction. Right now, fuel reduction grant work that ODF does, they push the 100 feet. They do 30 feet primary and then 100 feet up to the property line, not exceeding the property. I've been doing fuel reduction work for 6 years now, working various different grants, and to bring it down to 30 feet would just be too dangerous. You have firefighters in the zone where they have a wall of flames over close to 30 feet to a home.
I thought you said it was 30. They're pushing 30 feet now. And
30 feet minimum.
Yeah.
That's all it's asking for total. You have 30 foot. And that's it. What I'm talking is they're pushing 100 feet. 30 foot primary, 70 foot secondary. When they do their grants. I tried to get one of them come out here to explain why they came up with the standard like this, but maybe to get out. Most of the states neighboring us, Arizona, Colorado, California, all have much larger areas for defensible space zone. Their primaries are mostly 30 feet, and their secondaries are 75, 70, and then this one goes up to 125.
Did you give this testimony to the committee?
I was never involved in the... I also went on to the encyclopedia, and even shows defensible spaces at least 100 feet with a 30-foot primary. Firewise also says 30-foot primary and then secondary zone to be thinned out. We're not talking about taking out trees. Everything is talking about minimizing fuel. To do it at only 30 feet, I think, would be dangerous. So my recommendation would be to keep the 100 feet to the property lines and be a 30-70 versus a 50-50.
Okay. What was the 70?
It's 30 foot primary, 70 feet secondary.
Okay.
Versus, I believe right now it's 50 foot and 50 foot.
Our current is,
I think, I've been heard that
Article 7
or
6. It depends on the slope. You've got a steep slope, though, but I've got a couple 100 feet, maybe.
Right. If you just keep it a standard
30-70,
I think you'd be...
You're recommending
30-70
for all the zones, except maybe the low?
Even if you go into the low zone, all you're doing is separating fuels. Whether you have dense brush areas or trees, you were talking about the embers flying towards the home ignition zone. What if you have more fuel closer to the structure, you're going to have more embers. And I guarantee you there's a lot more holes there than people know.
I think another, and I can't begin to argue with you about what's a safer standard because you have way more expertise. I know that they did have testimony from a fire expert from the U.S. Forest Service at some of the meetings when they were setting the standards for the OARs under Senate Bill 360, and they had a little presentation that showed that if you had done your fire suppression work, and I don't remember if it was 30 or 40 or 50, but it was not very much. If you'd done it to this right standards on that primary zone, 95% of the houses survived the wildfire, even the Crown Fire, unassisted. And I think may have been part of their reasoning that you didn't need more space in that. I don't have any problem with going with 100 myself. I mean, this is based on Oregon State standards. So,
well,
it sounds to me like maybe the Oregon State ought to change them if they're going to be changed.
I
already had a talk with them tonight. I was trying to have one of them come and explain why they did it to begin with. But
well, I hear you say that they have a prison standard that is 30 feet, but they're actually pushing 100 feet.
They actually push. When they push their fuels grants out there, they push 100 feet. They do the
I got a grant that came out and helped all. They gave me $300 on one place and $400 on another for 100 foot around the house. But 100 instead of 50, you're spending four times as much energy fixing the property.
Right, but you're going from light fuels reduction to heavy fuels reduction closer to the home.
Right. Oh, yeah. I understand that. Like I said, I'm not going to push it one way or the other. This is a recommendation we came up with based on Oregon's standards. And I guess our client, if we want to go with Oregon standards or with your recommendations, and or suggest that maybe the Oregon should raise liberal.
Well, I think, like I said, they
they're based on these different fire hazard areas, though, so it's not just based on sisters. And I'm sure you know this, all over Tilden County's broken down to low, medium, high, and extreme. So they are based on specific conditions.
All right, Mr. Hogan, in the back.
Yeah, I appreciate what the gentleman's saying, but I think that's the kind of information and testimony that would be best presented at the public hearing. For you folks to make some, we got the information, but I don't think he can make any changes to these recommendations that he has at least presented. But again, the whole purpose of our committee was to look at the rules. Are we more restrictive or less restrictive? Can't be less restrictive, but more restrictive than state law, and we wanted to bring it back to the most restrictive state law. And I wish to take my life folks here, because this is the one area that really bothers me a little bit, where two agencies have come up with some sets of standards that can be crosswise with each other. The one thing is the property owner is supposed to be able to maintain his property and make sure he's got enough vegetation for the wildlife, the deer. But under Senate Bill 360, you're required to remove some of the vegetation that would probably provide food for those animals in order to meet the Senate Bill 360 requirements. It's always been an interesting scenario because I don't think that would really be addressed much. There's some conflicts in there between the two entities. So what does the property owner do? Does he provide maintain food for the deer, or does he take care and ensure that his home is protected in the 360 requirements? And I probably would do the 360 because there's a pretty heavy bond on that though.
I was just plant broccoli. It's non flammable.
That completes your recommendations. All right. Any general discussion on Nelson's presentation by the commissioners?
I would suggest that you also
we'll probably take them one at a time, frankly.
All right, staff is clear, and the commissioners agree on that.
Okay.
Right. Item 3, commission discussion on anything. Any other topic?
The only thing I wanted to mention, Mr. Swift and I were talking about the Deer Winter Range mapping, and he's going to take a crack at the actual ordinance language. His recommendation from LDOT came to you as a set of just general recommendations, so Jack is going to look at the language itself and try to craft from the existing ordinance, how would that be amended to reflect LDOC's recommendations? So he'll be doing that work. We'll do the mapping to show the difference, again, based on his recommendation. What does the LDOC recommendation look like on the ground in a GIS map? Compare that to the GIS map that we have for the existing Deer Winter Range.
Right.
I do want to remind the Planning Commission that, as the gentleman from ODFW mentioned, Deer Winter Range is considered a Goal 5 resource. You've got a statute, and we've got some direction from LCDC on what kind of analysis we have to go through to make any changes to ordinances that affect a Goal 5 resource. So there's a fair amount of work that has to be done there. Jackson County is going through a similar exercise right now. And I'll probably be calling their planning director to find out just how painful this is. So there's some work to be done on that, and that was part of the reason that I'd like to take a deep breath and see what we're getting ourselves into in making those ordinance changes. We can get back to you with an update on how we're doing at the next workshop.
So with
maybe a timeline. It seems simpler to me, yes. And that's probably what we'd recommend.
All right, let's do it that way.
What was this ex parte contact with this?
Oh, the citizen that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not clear really what that was all about.
So. Wasn't really clear either. What happened was that the gentleman had requested from another department who's on the planning commission. And the list was forwarded over to that department and it had your email addresses on it. He just took the liberty of sending everyone an email. You didn't.
That's weird because maybe yours.
Everyone's address is on
the one I got.
Yeah, it's recorded.
Maybe it went to your spam folder. I don't know.
What is the disposition of that gentleman's request? I didn't respond to it. I don't know
if he doesn't have any request. I think he was raising an objection to something that was a condition or an issue in a previous case that the planning commission had heard. How far back was it? A year and a half ago?
About a year and a half ago,
there was a condition of a development that he had, and he objected to that and wanted to let you know, apparently.
Yeah, it had to do with the increase in runoff, and what are we going to do about it, the planning commission? And
right.
I didn't quite get it from that point on. I don't know what I do about it, but I don't think it's my... I don't think the planning commission's...
It's pretty unusual, so... I'll see where it goes from here.
We'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.